Welcome to The Frontier, where we delve into fascinating research with intrigue and depth. I'm Tom.
And I'm Jen. Today's episode explores a groundbreaking paper titled Matching Under Imperfectly Transferable Utility by Alfred Galikin and Simon Weber.
This work examines a crucial issue in matching markets, when utility cannot be perfectly transferred between partners. Unlike the classical transferable utility case, partners here face constraints on the utility allocations they can achieve together.
The authors provide a comprehensive framework to model these imperfectly transferable utility, or E2, situations. They introduce the concept of a bargaining set, the set of feasible utility allocations for a matched pair.
Through insightful examples, the paper illustrates how this bargaining set can take various shapes beyond the simple linearity of transferable utility. Tax policies, consumption choices within households, and more can generate intricate bargaining frontiers.
The key innovation lies in representing these bargaining sets implicitly through distance to frontier functions. This allows complex models to be constructed by combining simpler building blocks algebraically.
Furthermore, the authors develop an equilibrium concept called the aggregate equilibrium. This provides an elegant way to determine the matching patterns, systematic utilities, and other equilibrium outcomes in large markets with unobserved heterogeneity.
They prove the existence and uniqueness of this equilibrium under certain assumptions. Remarkably, the problem can be recast as finding a vector of prices that clears the market for all goods, representing the various possible couple types.
For the important logit case, they provide an extremely tractable framework. The aggregate equilibrium can be computed by solving a low-dimensional system of nonlinear equations iteratively using a natural algorithm.
The authors then turn to estimating these E2 models, developing nested and constrained likelihood approaches. They discuss computational challenges and propose ways to overcome them, such as data augmentation.
Overall, this paper makes foundational contributions to the theory and empirics of matching markets beyond the transferable utility benchmark. It offers a versatile toolkit to study imperfect transferability arising in labor, marriage, and many other markets.
Looking ahead, this framework enables researchers to build richer economic models capturing constraints on within-match transfers. It opens up new avenues to analyze policies influencing intra-household allocations or tax schedules affecting worker utilities.
The implications span topics like household bargaining power, consumption patterns, labor supply decisions, and more. By relaxing an important assumption, this work significantly expands the scope of matching market analysis.
Personally, I'm excited about the marriage market applications. Capturing real-world features like joint consumption of public goods allows for more realistic positive and normative analyses of family economics.
Absolutely. And on the labor side, being able to incorporate taxation and wage-setting constraints is game-changing for understanding worker-firm matching patterns and outcomes. Policy evaluation just got much richer.
In essence, Galikin and Weber have provided a versatile language to articulate and study imperfect transfers between partners in matching settings. A linguistic revolution, if you will.
A powerful new idiom indeed. One that lets us engage with the nuanced realities of economic matching in a way the classical transferable utility case could not. The frontiers of knowledge have been redefined. Here's a funny, weird commercial for a new company inspired by the paper on matching under imperfectly transferable utility announcer. Are you sick of your perfect spouse? Tired of their flawless cooperation and always getting exactly what you want? Then you need Blursday solutions. Scene shifts to a frazzled-looking person sitting alone eating a sad salad announcer. With Blursday's patented imperfect partner matching, we introduce blessed constraints into your household's decision-making. Say goodbye to that boring transferable utility. The person perks up, looking relieved as a quirky upbeat melody plays announcer. Our team of experts will carefully select and assign your new imperfectly transferable partner. Inefficient? Check. Suboptimal? You betcha. A bargaining frontier that's anything but linear? It's what we do, baby. Cut to the same person now dancing with a cartoonish, mismatched partner announcer. Rekindle the spark of interpersonal negotiation. Struggle together through the gnarly geometry of your bargaining set. Experience the frictions modern economic theory can buy. Call for your free consultation today. Blursday Solutions, inefficiently yours. A couple arguing about grocery bills gaily skips across the screen. Welcome listeners to Business Cycle Breakdown, where we analyze the latest research on economic cycles and crises. Today we're diving into a fascinating paper that provides causal evidence on what drove the booming U.S. housing market in the 2000s and its subsequent bust during the Great Recession.
That's right, Tom. This paper from Bo Lee at Arizona State University takes a novel approach to test various theories about the underlying causes of the boom-bust cycle around the 2008 financial crisis. Using metropolitan area data and an innovative research design, the author is able to make causal claims that have been difficult in previous studies.
The key finding is that a credit expansion in private label mortgage lending led to differentially stronger booms and busts in house-related industries like construction and real estate across U.S. metro areas. Areas that had higher growth in export industries before the 2000s saw more private mortgage credit flow in, fueling bigger housing booms that then went bust more severely.
Yes, and critically, the paper uses this empirical approach to evaluate and reject several prominent theories about what causes business cycles more broadly. Theories like the real business cycle model, speculative euphoria, collateral-driven credit cycles, and extrapolative expectations don't seem to fit the pattern in the data.
Let's walk through the research design that allows for these causal tests. The authors operationalize something called the economic base theory, which says that growth in export-oriented industries like manufacturing drives local demand for housing and services through its impact on incomes and employment.
Right, so metro areas with bigger export booms in the 90s due to factors like trade policy changes saw more income growth, which then attracted more mortgage lending for housing investment during the 2000s credit expansion. This export-driven shift in mortgage supply sets up a great natural experiment.
Exactly. Traditional OLS regressions comparing areas with more versus less mortgage credit would face endogeneity problems. Maybe mortgage lenders just chase hot housing markets they expect to grow more.
Yes, that's why the authors use a brilliant instrumental variable strategy. They construct a gravity model type instrument that captures just the supply-driven component of mortgage flows based on characteristics like the geographic distance and regulatory similarities between areas and major private mortgage lenders.
This breaks the reverse causality issue, allowing them to isolate the causal impact of differential mortgage credit supply on the boom and bust patterns we see across sectors and regions. The gravity model predictions line up strongly with the actual private mortgage flows.
With this research design in hand, the paper can start making some adjudications between theories. The finding that export-driven mortgage credit explains the cycle pattern seems to reject pure speculative narratives, where house price expectations get overheated on their own without a credit supply expansion.
And it casts doubt on the real business cycle view that technological progress or preference shocks were the prime regional movers. If that were true, we wouldn't see such a tight link between the export instrument and the difference in boom-bust magnitudes across areas.
Yes, and they further test other variants like natural disaster impacts or local productivity shocks to the construction sector itself. But none of those fit the export-driven differential patterns we see.
The results also push against the idea of a pure collateral-driven credit cycle, where housing booms raise collateral values and relax credit constraints in a self-perpetuating way. Here the initial driver is income shocks from export growth.
And theories where time-varying uncertainty or extrapolative expectations are the key drivers don't align well with the featured role of mortgage supply shifts in this episode.
Definitely a wide-ranging theoretical sweep by the author. Before we get to our final reflections, Jen, I want to commend the phenomenal data work here spanning employment records, housing permits, mortgage issuance and pricing across all U.S. counties. Seriously impressive empirical heavy lifting.
You're absolutely right, Tom. The richness of the data and care put into all the measurement decisions is awe-inspiring and gives tremendous credibility to the findings.
In reflecting on the implications, to me this study underscores the potential potency but also fragility of credit supply shifts as a source of economic fluctuations. The ability of mortgage markets to reallocate capital seems to have turbocharged housing boom busts in a way disconnected from fundamentals.
Agreed. And it highlights how if credit supply becomes misaligned with the real economic base, you can get these wildly inefficient boom-bust investment cycles across regions. There may be policy lessons about monitoring and restraining such credit flow imbalances to prevent extreme volatility.
Those are all great points, Jen. For anyone wanting to go deeper, we'll link the full paper analysis in our show notes. Let us know if you have any other insights on this fascinating study of the Great Recession.
Lots more to explore on this topic for sure. Join us next week when we'll break down the latest research on climate impacts and risks to the financial system. Until then, happy analyzing.
Here's a funny and weird commercial for a bizarre company that could have emerged from the findings in the paper on business cycle theories during the Great Recession. Quirky electronic music plays announcer. Are you tired of your local economy being held hostage by reckless mortgage lenders? Sick of housing bubbles that blow up in everyone's face? Well, folks, there's finally a solution. Animated diagram of a house with boxing gloves appears on screen announcer. Introducing LendLock Array. The first mortgage approval system guided by sophisticated economic base analysis. A silver robot with a realtor's suit and visor appears LendLocker robot, beeping sounds activating regional export data harmonization protocols, running gravity model simulations. Announcer, with LendLockerRay's patented AI technology, we'll only approve mortgage volumes for your area that are fundamentally justified by the strength of your local export economy. Shows animated houses getting blown away. Then LendLocker robot pushes a big red button that locks the houses down. LendLocker robot, robot voice, credit supply imbalance detected. Initializing mortgage lockdown procedures. Announcer, no more harebrained housing frenzies. Just sustainable mortgage flows aligning with your true economic base. Shackle your local lenders to the fundamental before it's too late. Subscribe now for $49.99 a month to LendLocker A, the toughest new hand in housing economics. LendLocker robot winks and gives a thumbs up as logos and fine print air. Welcome to another intriguing episode where we delve into cutting-edge research to unravel complex topics through compelling storytelling and expert analysis.
Today, we'll be exploring a captivating study that sheds light on the challenges faced by individuals when disclosing their sexual orientation. This groundbreaking research utilizes an innovative data source from the popular online video game, League of Legends, to investigate the reactions and consequences of coming out.
In League of Legends, players select a character to control during each match, with each character having a rich backstory. The study leverages a pivotal moment when game developers unexpectedly revealed that one of the playable characters, Graves, is gay, coinciding with the start of LGBT Pride Month in 2022.
By tracking players' preferences for Graves over time, the researchers could isolate the impact of this disclosure on their revealed choices. To ensure robust identification, they employed synthetic control methods, constructing a synthetic character that closely resembled Graves' pre-announcement preference history.
The findings are startling. After the disclosure, players' preferences for Graves experienced a substantial and persistent decline of more than 30% relative to the pre-treatment average. This negative impact held consistent across various robustness checks and regional analyses, underscoring the prevalence of stigma and potential aversion towards sexual minority status.
However, the researchers went a step further to strengthen the plausibility of their interpretation. They systematically addressed and eliminated several alternative explanations, such as changes in the character's strength, player's skill levels, or performance considerations. This meticulous approach reinforces the credibility of social stigma as the primary driver behind the observed behavior.
Moreover, the study elegantly disentangles the effects of Graves' disclosure from the broader context of LGBT Pride Month. By leveraging the presence of other LGBT characters, the researchers demonstrated that the estimated impact was primarily driven by the revelation of Graves' sexual orientation rather than the Pride Month festivities.
This research offers profound insights into the challenges faced by individuals from stigmatized groups, particularly those with concealable identities like sexual orientation. The findings underscore the potential negative consequences of disclosing one's sexual minority status and provide a rationale for the underrepresentation of such individuals in various domains.
Indeed, Jen. The study's innovative approach and rigorous methodology contribute significantly to our understanding of discrimination and stigma. Its implications extend beyond the realm of video games, highlighting the societal importance of fostering inclusive environments and combating discriminatory attitudes.
Absolutely, Tom. This research serves as a call to action for policymakers and communities to develop interventions that promote acceptance, raise awareness, and provide support for individuals who have recently come out. By addressing stigmatization and its consequences, we can create a more equitable and inclusive society for all.
Here's a funny, weird, and concise commercial for a fictional company inspired by the research paper on the cost of coming out. Opening scene, a medieval fantasy tavern setting with patrons laughing and drinking announcer's voice. Are you tired of your favorite video game characters being boring straight people? Well, have we got the company for you. A bard stands up on a table, strumming a lute bard. Oh folks, let me sing a tale of a game where all characters unveil that they're gay, bi, or trans, no straight folks in these lands. The tavern grows silent, patrons look confused. Announcer, introducing Quirious Gaming. The first and only game studio exclusively dedicated to crafting video games with LGBTQ+ lead characters. The bard dances provocatively, bard, no more stigma, just fun times. Your gameplay will be sublime. Embrace the rainbow, it's here to stay, with Quirious, come out and play. Announcer, Quirious Gaming, because level 100 inclusivity is the only acceptable endgame. A giant rainbow dragon breathes rainbow fire, scene fades. Welcome to the Privacy Revelations podcast, where we explore fascinating research on data privacy and online advertising with compelling analysis and storytelling. I'm Tom.
And I'm Jen. Today we're diving into a fascinating study that looks at how consumers perceive privacy violations under different online advertising practices, including emerging privacy-enhancing technologies.
That's right, Jen. This study from researchers at Columbia University and Hec Paris uses something called the Dual Privacy Framework to understand the intrinsic and instrumental factors that shape consumers' perceived privacy violations.
The intrinsic component refers to a consumer's innate desire for privacy and control over their personal information, while the instrumental component is about the perceived economic costs and benefits of sharing data with firms.
Exactly. The key idea is that different online ad practices like behavioral targeting, contextual ads, or privacy sandboxes impact these intrinsic and instrumental privacy preferences differently, leading to varying levels of perceived privacy violation.
To test this, the researchers conducted a brilliant experiment with over 1,700 U.S. consumers. They presented different scenarios of ad targeting practices and asked people to rate their level of perceived privacy violation.
And the results were fascinating. As expected, the current industry standard of behavioral targeting with individual user tracking led to very high perceived privacy violations.
Interestingly, the much-challenged privacy sandbox proposals from Google, which keep user data on device, did lower perceived violations compared to behavioral targeting. But this reduction was actually quite small.
Yeah, that surprised me too. It seems consumers didn't find a huge distinction between individual targeting versus Google's proposed group-level targeting, as long as they were still being tracked and shown targeted ads.
A key finding was that contextual targeting, where ads are based just on the current web page without tracking browsing history, led to a much bigger drop in perceived privacy violations.
It really highlights that for consumers, privacy seems to be more about the ad experience and targeting itself, rather than the technical details of where data is stored or processed.
Absolutely. The researchers argue we need to take a consumer-centric view of privacy that goes beyond just technical definitions. Consumer education could also help bridge that gap.
Well summarized, Jen. This study provides valuable insights for advertisers and policymakers grappling with consumer privacy concerns. The dual privacy framework seems to offer a useful lens too.
Indeed, Tom. Understanding both the intrinsic desire for privacy control and the instrumental economic factors is crucial for evaluating current and future data practices.
Privacy in online advertising is such a complex issue, but studies like this really help advance our understanding in an objective, data-driven way.
Definitely. A big thank you to the researchers for this illuminating work. I'm sure we'll be revisiting this topic again soon on Privacy Revelations.
Sounds great. Thanks for joining us today, listeners. Catch you next time on Privacy Revelations. Upbeat jingle plays announcer. Are you tired of online ads that make you feel violated and exposed? Then come on down to Dual Privacy Incorporated, the privacy solution you can trust. Cut to silly cartoon mascots, an hourglass figure representing intrinsic privacy and a piggy bank for instrumental privacy intrinsic Iggy. Hi there. I'm Iggy, the intrinsic privacy mascot. With Dual Privacy's patented technology, you'll maintain complete control and feel secure about your data. Instrumental Penny, and I'm Penny, looking out for your economic interests. Our system maximizes the benefits of data sharing while minimizing those sneaky costs. Announcer, at Dual Rivacy, we understand your dual privacy needs with scientific precision. Our advanced contextual targeting shows you relevant ads based only on the content you're viewing, no sketchy tracking required. Iggy and Penny high five, shooting out confetti instrumental Penny, no more privacy nightmares. Just focused, relevant messaging. Intrinsic Iggy, letting you surf the web with total peace of mind. Announcer, make the switch to Dual Rivacy, the privacy solution backed by groundbreaking research from top universities. Call 1-800-DUAL-RIV now. Iggy and Penny dance around displaying the phone number before cutting to black. Announcer, Dual Rivacy, prioritizing your privacies. Welcome to Unraveling Research, where we dive deep into fascinating academic papers and explore their implications. I'm Tom.
And I'm Jen. Today, we'll be looking at a paper titled Paying for Privacy, Payor Tracking Walls by researchers from Goethe University Frankfurt and HEC Paris.
This is a really interesting and timely topic. Many prominent websites and apps, like news publishers and even Meta's Facebook, have started implementing payor tracking walls. These prompt users to either pay a fee to avoid being tracked online for ad targeting purposes, or allow tracking for free access.
Exactly. It raises concerns that online privacy could become a luxury only available to the affluent. But there's been little empirical research on how widespread this practice is, how it's being implemented, and what the implications are for users, publishers, and the broader privacy landscape.
That's where this paper comes in. The researchers conducted four separate empirical studies using various datasets to comprehensively investigate pay or tracking walls from different angles. Let's walk through their key findings.
Definitely. In their first study, they found that as of late 2022, major publishers in Austria, France, Germany, and Italy were using pay or tracking walls, but it wasn't yet widespread in most other European countries.
And there was quite a lot of variation in how these publishers designed and priced their pay or tracking options, right? Some bundled the paid option with ad-free access or extra content, while others just offered a straightforward pay-to-not-be-tracked option.
Exactly. The pricing also varied widely, from around 40 cents to over 11 euros per month for the cheapest paid option to avoid tracking. Interestingly, the researchers found that these prices generally exceeded the ad revenue a publisher would make from tracking an individual user.
That's an important point. It suggests publishers are treating pay or tracking almost like a premium option, not just recouping potential lost ad revenue from users who don't want to be tracked.
Definitely a noteworthy insight. Their third study looked at whether implementing a pay or tracking wall led to declines in website traffic, as some users might just decide to abandon that publisher altogether.
But remarkably, they found no evidence of a drop in page views or visits after top German news sites rolled out their pay or tracking walls. Most visitors seemed to just accept being tracked rather than paying or leaving.
Which brings us to the fourth study, where they analyzed clickstream data from one of those top German publishers after implementing the wall. They estimated that only around 1% of users actually paid to avoid tracking, while the vast majority allowed tracking for free access.
So in essence, these pay or tracking walls seem to be providing a way for publishers to expand user tracking rather than giving people a real choice over privacy. The researchers calculated publishers could see over 16% more revenue from the increased tracking enabled by the walls compared to a traditional consent banner.
Those are the key findings in a nutshell. Tying it all together, this paper raises some significant concerns around the tension between monetization interests and user privacy rights under laws like GDPR. While technically allowing users to pay to avoid tracking, publishers are utilizing walls in ways that heavily incentivize the free tracking option.
Absolutely. And the fact that so few users are willing or able to pay for privacy portrays it as a luxury good only accessible to the affluent. There are certainly arguments on both sides here, but this research suggests regulators may need to take a careful look at whether pay or tracking walls actually comply with the spirit of privacy laws.
Those are really insightful points. This topic has significant ramifications for the future of privacy, digital monetization models, and inequality of privacy rights. An important area for further research and potential policy reform.
Definitely a rich and complex issue that this paper has helped illuminate through rigorous empirical analysis. We'll be watching to see how the debate around pay or tracking walls evolves.
an impactful piece of work analyzing an emerging phenomenon with profound implications. Thanks for joining us to unravel this research paper.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Unraveling Research. Catch you next time as we dive into another cutting-edge academic study. Here's a funny, weird, and concise commercial for a fictional company that could exist as a result of the paying for privacy research paper announcer. Are you sick of websites forcing you to choose between your privacy and your pockets? Well, say hello to Privacy++. Upbeat music plays, sound effects of coins jingling announcer. Privacy++ is the revolutionary new service that lets you pay to avoid all those pesky pay or tracking walls with one low monthly fee. That's right, for just $29.99 a month, we'll handle the hassle of paying every single website's individual privacy tax. So you can browse in total anonymity and blissful ignorance. Sound effect of someone breathing a contented sigh announcer. Never again will you have to decide whether targeted ads about male pattern baldness cures are worth undermining your fundamental human rights. We'll pay those sleazy publishers to leave you alone on your behalf. And as a bonus, our premium platinum Privacy++ tier gets you a free tin foil hat refresher course every quarter. Stay tuned for our next exciting product, a blockchain-based privacy cryptocurrency called PrivaCoin. Stirring orchestral finale, coins jingling again announcer, Privacy++... because basic human dignity really should be a subscription service.